If you would love to create a transformational and successful coaching business, but you don't know where to start or how to make this a full-time career, then my new certification program, Influential Coach, is for you. There is no other four-month live online mastermind like this. I'm going all in, guns blazing on this one with you to skyrocket your coaching career and personal brand online. You will learn the frameworks I personally use for rapid transformational coaching so you can support your clients to achieve their dreams no matter where they are in life. You will also learn how to authentically brand and market yourself as a coach so you can stand out from the rest and build a career of freedom and fulfillment. Spots are limited and this is an application-only program. So if you're serious about finally committing to building a successful career in transformational coaching, then head over to imjoelbrown.com/coach and apply today. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Addicted to Success podcast. I'm your host, Joel Brown, and I'm here today with J.M. Ryerson, who is a top best-selling author. He's a leadership mindset and performance coach. He sold 3 7-figure businesses. He's written the books Let's Go Win, Champions Daily Playbook, and Upgrade. Wow. JM, I'm so excited to extract the wisdom from you in this session today on this episode. I feel like there's so much that you could share with us over the 20 years that you have sold businesses and managed teams and led people to success as well. So thank you for being here today. It sounds like you're addicted to success too.
Brother, I love your name of your show, your website. You and I were talking off air. So absolutely, I'm blessed to be here. I'm humbled to be here, brother. And just, you know, getting to know you has just been amazing for me. So yeah, man, let's have a good time. This should be fun.
Love it, man. Well, you know the way I like to do podcasts, I don't like the whole hero's journey. Okay, so tell me where you began. It gets really boring after a while when you have to keep repeating it yourself and when I keep asking those questions. So let's switch it up today. Let's jump into principles. Let's talk strategy. You can plant some seeds and share stories along the way. I feel like anyone that's listening right now that wants to pull out their journal or their notepad and take notes, this is the time to do it. We're going to get into some practical, actionable things. And I would love for you, JM, to just kick things off with how do we upgrade our way of thinking so that we can achieve more success? Let's talk about that.
This is literally why I wrote the third book is I realized after 20 years of coaching, Joel, people don't like change. And every time I was trying to change someone, you're pointing a finger and saying there's something wrong with you. And the truth is there's nothing wrong with anybody that I'm working with, but could we upgrade? And the moment I said, all right, let's just reword this. Let's go from saying change to upgrade. People were like, oh yeah, I'd love to do that. I'd love to upgrade. You know, it's funny. You go to the airline and they're like, hey, Mr. Ryerson, we're going to bump you from your coach seat to first class. Well, it's a change, but it's an upgrade. And I'm fired up about it. It's really the same way to look at our lives is there's nothing wrong with who you are, what you're doing, but could you be just a little bit better? And so that's just one of my mantras, my philosophies is just get better every single day. I think you had James Clear on your show and his thing is get 1% better every day. And I understand the principle and the idea of it, but I couldn't ever wrap my brain around 1%. So I just simplified. I was like, hey, I just want to upgrade, get a little bit better every day. That's my hope. That's what I'm trying to do. And so, yeah, man, I think it's just really looking at it and saying, there's nothing wrong with me, but could I be a little bit better? And I think all of us can, because if we ever think we've arrived, we've already lost.
Yes. I love this. I love that you've looked into the science of what it takes as well, right? Because we all hear the quotes and the platitudes. It's like you can keep hearing the information, but how do we actually create the change, right? How do we transform? How do we upgrade? I want to get a snapshot, an insight into two examples of where you have upgraded your life. And maybe give us a bit of a timeline of how long that took you to upgrade for the process of the upgrade so that people can see that this is actually possible. Because I think if someone could actually see that there is a way that you did it, there's a blueprint to it,
they'll see that there is a formula that they can follow to be able to achieve it. And maybe it's in your book. I'm sure it is. But yeah, I would love a couple of examples of where you did this and saw a massive shift in your life.
Yeah, the big one that I can think of is when my wife and I were separated for almost a year. And that's crazy to say now because, you know, we've almost been together 19 years married, you know, and to think that there was a time where literally the woman I loved, I didn't like the side of her. I didn't even like anything about her, but I was putting it all on her. The truth is, when I looked in the mirror, I wasn't happy. I wasn't happy with me. I was almost 300 pounds at that time. You know, I was making seven figures plus a year. So everything on the outside looked great, but my relationship was a mess. My health was a mess. And that's the time where I said, dude, this just isn't working. You need to do better. And so it really started just getting back into those routines to take care of myself first so that I could show up as the best father, the best husband, the best, you know, employer, whatever hat I was wearing. And so it started with looking in the mirror and saying, look, man, you need to do better. You need to take care of your mind, your body, and your soul every single morning was literally the stepping off point. Now, my morning routine is almost 2.5 hours now, which is a little intense, but it's what I found to be the best for me. Now, I don't coach on that. I'm not trying to get anybody to do 2.5 hours because that's just, honestly, it's too much. But I found for me, Joel, for me to show up and be the best version that I can be, just like I did this morning. I wanted to give my very best to your show, to your audience. So I need to pour into myself first so that I can do that. So you asked for two examples. That was the one that really stands out, because to look in the mirror and literally be like, well, you were an athlete in college. Now you're almost 300 pounds. You're not feeling well about who you are. That was when I decided, look, let's upgrade and let's start just taking care of our mind, body, soul.
Do you think that we're just really poor observers? We're not present in our own life. We're not looking at ourselves and auditing ourselves, that we're just constantly living in the future or in a fear of repeating the past?
Brother, this is such a great point. I equate it to when we look in the mirror, we see something. But it's not necessarily an accurate reflection. And the best example I can give is if you leave a voicemail and you listen to your voice, you don't sound how you think you sound. I found that for myself. So I think it is that where we think we're showing up a certain way, but it's not really accurate. And what I've told people is feedback is such gold. I don't care how harsh the feedback is. I say the same thing every time. Thank you. If somebody's willing to give me feedback about the way I'm showing up, if it's good, bad, or indifferent, I don't care. As long as you're giving it to me, you're helping me get better every single day. So yeah, to answer your question, man, we don't have an accurate reflection of who we are, how we're showing up to the world. That's why you constantly want to know the people that really care about you. How am I showing up? Am I being the best version of me? And if not, please tell me so I can work on it.
Yeah. How do we remove the distortions? Because you're saying that when you leave a voice note and then you listen back, you're like, wow, I don't sound like what I thought I sounded like, right? And I heard somebody the other day, I think it was on a podcast or an audiobook I was listening to, where he said that most of the time, whatever we're dreaming and envisioning and thinking we can do, it's usually three times longer to actually achieve the thing. We sort of trick ourselves into thinking that the timeline's going to be a certain length when it's really not. That's on average, obviously. Sometimes you have, you know, things that happen quite quickly when you get into action. But how do we start to shorten the gap and remove the distortion and start to think more clearly so that we can achieve our goals? What have you found helpful in this area of development?
Yeah, man, this is such a great question. And this is something that I give my wife, first and foremost, permission to always keep me accountable. So my goals are always in my bathroom mirror. They have forever. I call it the mirror method. I'm not the only one that's said that, and I won't be the last one. But I share it with my wife and my kids. And I'll give you an example. I wrote on my goals to write the first book. I had it up there for 3 years. And at the time, my youngest son, I think he was about 8. And he said, "Hey, Dad, how's the book going?" And brother, he absolutely destroyed me and inspired me in one moment, because I won't lie to my kids. And I said, "I have a little bit of chapter one done, and it's not very good." I finished the book within 6 months of him saying that, because I wasn't showing up the way I'm teaching them to show up. I wasn't being accountable to my own work. So I think it's really giving permission to people to say, "Hey, this is what I want to do, but I know I'm fallible. I'm human, man. We make mistakes. I would love your support, and I'm giving you permission, no matter how much it hurts, to remind me what I'm trying to do." So for instance, if I don't want to wake up in the morning, my wife has perfect permission to say, "Get your lazy butt out of bed and get going." I've asked her to do that for me, because the truth is, we want it immediate gratification, and the immediate gratification is sleeping in. It's like, "Hey man, that sounds really good right now, but that's not what I really want out of life." So I give her permission to say, "Hey, give me that kick to get me going, because I'm not always going to be inspired. I'm not always going to be at my very best. And I'm trusting that you'll help me keep me accountable to it."
Yeah. There's something about ownership that just moves the needle, right? I have a book here by Jocko Willink called The Dichotomy of Leadership and also Extreme Ownership. And that's a game changer. Yeah. Just to fully take it on board and say, "Hey, every decision that I've made in my life is on me." where I live and what is showing up in my reality is my fault, whether it's good or bad, however I label it, right? And I think that it really is powerful, because you realize that you can also upgrade at any point in time, right? We downgrade ourselves too by making stupid decisions. So obviously the quality of life that we want is to be full and to be powerful. So we've got to make better quality decisions, right? Do you have a decision-making process? Do you have like a list of priorities that you focus on each day? Do you get yourself centered before you go in and start work? Like, what's your process? I'd love to hear your habits and how you connect with your identity and come from a place of power.
Yeah. So I call it the core three. There's usually three things in a day that if I'm going to have a successful day, these are the things that I need to have happen. And each day it's slightly different. So for instance, I right now, am 100% focused on you and I. I'm going to give everything that I have to Joel and his audience, and whatever else I have going on, I'm not focused on that, because I can't. I don't have the ability to multitask. And I did talk about that in my first book. But to answer your question, it's like, I do get centered. When I'm doing my meditation, I'm reaching out to God, universe, spirit guides, one of the three, maybe all three at the same time, and say, what do I really need to do today to show up as the best version of me? And answers come, brother. I don't know if it's my internal or it's literally coming from the universe, and I don't care. But the answers always come back to say, look, you need to be extremely active in this way. You need to focus on this relationship. You need to reach out to these business people. And it always happens in those meditations. I used to do it the night before. I would spend my time really focused on what I'm going to do the next day. But I found that it wasn't serving what I needed in the moment to really be present. And you mentioned that earlier. Being present is something that, in this world of distractions that we have, it can be challenging. And so that's really what I commit to, is I'm going to give 100% to this. Just like I told you off air, I was just at my son's tennis match. I had my phone off. I was just solely focused on his match. Did I have emails to do? Did I have things that I needed to get to? Yeah. And I did once it was done. And I've just found that to be so much more fulfilling than trying to juggle all of them at the same time. Being at my son's tennis match while doing work, while, you know, thinking about our podcasts, I'm not giving anything 100% at that point, and it's not very effective. So that's really my process, is to say, all right, what are my core three? And then really immerse myself 100% into it.
Yeah, I love this. Yeah, it's interesting. you mentioned God, right? So you said reaching out to God, praying to God, things are showing up in your life. Sometimes there's aspects of life we really can't explain, right? There's miracles and there's signs and things of that nature. And it's interesting because I was doing a big deep dive into this while I was writing my book, and we're looking at like how sometimes us as humans will spiritualize certain things that are not spiritual. And sometimes we'll miss things that are spiritual and call it something else. I wonder how often we think that something is God or the universe. And I believe in God. I believe that, that's possible. I wonder how often we do that, but really it's coming from our subconscious, our unconscious, right? I'd love for you to talk about this because I know in your book, or one, at least one of your books, you would have gone into this topic. So much of what runs the show is the unconscious behaviors that we have in place, right? We're almost like bouncing around like a pinball in a pinball machine. And a lot of it's just left up to our programs. So how do we hack this? How do we hack it and upgrade our computer system?
Yeah. So, dude, I love this. I'm so big into mantras. Like I feed my mantra, myself stuff all the time. And actually my kids, I'll go back to my kids for a second. They have said the exact same mantra every single night that they've lived. And it's a long one. I wouldn't suggest people use it, but I say, are you a leader? And they say, yes. I say, why? Because I'm confident, strong, intelligent, athletic, good looking, dynamic, popular, talented, independent man with a growth mindset. Now in hindsight, Joel, I should have cut that thing way down, like confident, strong, and, you know, vibrant or whatever thing that I wanted them to be. But it really showed up. And I did a video on this that actually got quite a bit of traction. My son was being bullied at school. And I said, what happened, Trey? And he goes, well, he called me fat. And I said, oh, okay. Well, what did you do? He said, I just repeated my mantra. I'm confident, strong, intelligent. And he did the whole thing. And I said, what'd the bully do? He goes, he didn't know what to say or do. And my son, it was one of those proud dad moments because, again, the world's going to tell us what we're not, that we're not confident, we're not strong. And there's all these things that are going to get pushed on us. And that's when we start to buy into that. You said programming, conditioning, hardwires, things that we've taken on without even knowing it at the time. And so that's how I try to rewire both my kids and for myself. And so after my meditation, I do about 3 minutes worth of mantras to really reinforce all the things that I am. I found that to be most successful for me because I used to have on my bathroom mirror as well, be kind, self-dialogue is a jerk. Because I really didn't say nice things to myself. My wife never understood it. She's like, why do you do that? And I was like, I don't know. So I literally had to tell myself I'm whole, perfect, strong, intelligent, all the things that I wanted to be. And I've found that for me to rewire my subconscious because I didn't want to take on these negative things, but I did at some point. So I needed to re-identify who I was.
Yeah, that's powerful. I know that when I have recorded my affirmations or my mantras and I've played it back to myself, it's been more powerful. I actually recorded them initially for my coaching clients to listen to, and so many of them have said that it's really helped them. And when I started listening back to it on days where I just was not playing on top, because we're going to have days where we're down, where we're dipping a bit, right? Mm-hmm. I was listening back over them and I started being like, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm listening to myself. Sometimes we need to coach ourselves too. And I find that your subconscious is somewhat probably receptive to it as well because it's your voice. And you hear a lot of the things in your own head that's your own voice too. So I love what you shared about being careful about what we say to ourselves as well, right? We always have in our mind with this chatter, the critic and the coach, right? Or that screaming person on the sideline that's booing the players on the court. You know, you always see this at sports games, right? You said that you took your kids to sports on the weekend and you're a big sports guy and supporter of your kids playing sports. sometimes you see this like extremely overweight, like looks like he's never picked up a football in his life and or a basketball in his life, and he's screaming at people on the field or the court. Mm-hmm. And we can be like that to ourselves. You know, we're so against ourselves. And so how do we overcome the obstacle of our own self? What do you do when you get caught up in these negative cycles? How do you overcome it? And how can we do that too?
Yeah, man, there's three questions I always ask when it comes to self-limiting beliefs. A, why do I believe that? The second one is that true? And the third question is, how is it showing up or serving me in my life? And so this was my big self-limiting belief came with money. I felt ashamed. The first time I made over seven figures, I think I was 27. And you would think that would be like, amazing, great job. That's something to aspire to. I felt horrible about myself, Joel. I literally didn't feel worthy of it because, really? Yeah, you know, because when my dad and I would be driving along, we would go by the country club and he would say, oh, those are the pretty people. And for some reason, I, you know, being pretty is a negative thing. I'm not sure why, but, you know, so I took that on as this negative thing. And it's funny now to say it because I've worked through all that, but I watched my dad had given me some of that stuff that his dad had given him, that his dad had given. So we're going back like three or four generations. Let's think about that for a second. That was in the early 1900s. So I'm literally taking this mindset and applying it to today. That is asinine. Like, that, why would you do that? But that was something that I had to work through. And so once I asked those questions, why do I believe that? Well, I believe that because I saw my dad and he would tell me this. And by the way, I love my dad. He was an amazing man, but he had his own limitations as well and self-limiting beliefs that he passed on. And so I believed it because of what my dad said. Well, is that true? Is making money a bad thing? No, it's not. It's just a thing. You can build great companies like you've done with Addicted to Success. You're helping a lot of people. The more money you make, the more you can give back. That's a great thing. But I didn't see it at the time. And how is that serving you? Well, why would it serve me anything but poorly if I'm looking in the mirror and beating myself up about making money? I mean, it's actually crazy when you say it all out loud. But when we're stuck in our head, man, we can literally wrap ourselves all up to, you know, just craziness. And so when you write these things out, you're like, wait a minute, why do I believe that? Oh, because of my dad. Is it true? No, it's not. So how is it serving me? It's not. Let's start and understand that making money can be an amazing thing. What can we do with it? And so that's just the process that I use, and it's been really helpful for me.
It's interesting you say that. I remember when I was younger, when I first started driving a car, my dad would call me and say, hey, make sure you go to this area. And the area was maybe 15 miles away. He says, they got gas on special at this price. And I'm like, Dad, it's going to save me like $2, but it's probably going to cost me $5. And I started listing it, right? Like wear and tear on the car, time that I'll never get back again, all of that to go and save $2. But he couldn't get out of his head for so long that it's not worth it. It to him, it was like, it's so worth it. If you could find a gas station that's cheaper, because they put it on the news and he'd like watch the news to see when the gas prices were at a certain price. I was just like, this is crazy. Where is he getting this from? Mm. And I feel like, especially when we're younger, we hit a fork in the road, don't we? We say, I'm either going to be like my parents or I'm going to go the other way and be nothing like them. So I love that you, although you did go the route where your dad did for a bit, you were able to rework that and iron out the creases. It's really good. Can you tell me a little bit about the process of you making your money, right? Because there are people that are listening right now that are, maybe they're aspiring entrepreneurs or they are entrepreneurs. Some of them are seven-figure, eight-figure entrepreneurs. We have actually a lot of CEOs that listen to the Addicted to Success podcast. But there are a huge pool of young entrepreneurs that really want to make it. And for whatever reason, what we've done in society is we've said seven figures, $1 million is the benchmark, right? And a lot of people's thermostat, financial thermostat, hits that and it goes below. It's not 2 million, 3, 5, 10. They keep thinking a million is so much money. But But obviously, you've built multiple businesses and sold multiple businesses for millions and multi-millions. So first of all, how did you make that money? So if you could break down how you did it, did you build a team of 20 people? Did you build a product and sell it? Did you run ads? Did you invest your money and multiply your money? What was the process? And then after that, we can talk a bit about adjusting and adapting your mindset to bigger numbers.
Yeah, it's funny. We were talking about when we were younger, we made these mistakes, right? How we didn't capitalize on it. And here's what I would tell you. I did a terrible job of investing. Like, I just always, money's always going to come. So I didn't reinvest the way, like, my father-in-law came from Thailand with like $200 in his pocket. My mother-in-law from Hong Kong with like very little money. And they have built an empire through really savvy investing, which is awesome. I wasn't that guy, man. I didn't listen to it until probably about 5 or 6 years ago. I mean, I had rental properties and whatnot, but I didn't create that passive income the way I probably should when I was making all that money when I was younger. But my process, I figured out really early what I'm good at. I'm great at building teams, leadership, and sales. That's it. So the first three companies I built was in the financial service world. But if you ask me a financial service question, brother, I am the worst one to answer. I just told you I wasn't very good at investing. But what I was good at was building teams. And I did it because I figured out who I was looking for. And once you do that, man, once you're really clear, like, this is exactly who I want on my team, like, let's go win. Happy, healthy, wealthy. Those are our three cultural values. So I know for somebody to be on the Let's Go Win team, they have to literally be a happy person. What I mean by that, if there's some people that just like to be a stick in the mud, okay, cool, man. No judgment, but you're just not going to get along on my team. You won't like being on my team because we bring happiness, man. We really want to do that. Same thing with being healthy. Living a healthy lifestyle, getting better every single day, working out, eating the right things. That's a real value to our company. And so if you're not into that, you're talking about the big guy that's yelling at people in the sports, that's probably not the guy for us because he's not really into being healthy. And wealthy, that's like for spiritual, that's not just for monetary sakes, that's for relationships and really that spiritual side of things, having that wealth in that way. So what I did is I figured out, okay, these are the cultural values. I just need to go find a bunch of people that buy into what we're doing. Once you do that and you get everybody on the same page, it's amazing how fast you can grow something. Just like, again, you're addicted to success. You were so clear on what you wanted because you were addicted, literally the name. And I haven't even asked you this. I'm going to when you're on my show. But that when you're clear on where you want to go, it's amazing how fast it can really accumulate. So that was really my process, just figuring out what I was passionate and good at and just really focusing on those.
Wonderful. I love that breakdown. So the money's coming in. Obviously, you have employees, you have to pay for the employees, you got to look at all your expenses, you're making sure you're in profits, you get a acquisition request, or you pitch the business to someone, you sold that business off, you built another business. Your winning formula, from what it sounds like, is that you're great at building teams. There are a lot of people out there that aren't. So if they can plug into a company that's already established and has great teams, it's worth a lot, right? When it came to the money itself, because you said you were brought up being told that rich people are pretty, which maybe it's like weak and feminine. Am I right in saying that? You sort of saw it as like kind of like feminine and probably not respected and just sort of like you sort of did something weaselly to get there?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, again, I grew up in Montana, brother. So it's like, you know, it's pretty tough nosed. Like
country.
I was taught boys don't cry. Yeah, country. So yeah, I think it was that idea. Now, trust me, if anybody calls me pretty now, thank you. Like, thank you so much. I want to be pretty.
That's good. Yeah, there's a saying, sitting pretty. When you're sitting pretty, you're doing good in life. Yeah, it's so funny how we can make something mean something and it can absolutely change the trajectory of our life, right? Crazy stuff. So, all right, you have the money coming in. You're doing well with that. how does your mind adjust to the bigger numbers? And I ask this because I coach a lot of people, and I find whenever it comes to the money mindset, everyone has that, like I said, the financial thermostat, the thermometer, and they hit a ceiling, right? For some people, even when it comes to offering their coaching services, because I train a lot of coaches, they're like, yeah, I'm going to charge $50 an hour. And I'm like, if I'm teaching you tools and frameworks and exercise and showing how to actually coach, I am absolutely offended if you charge $50 an hour, you know? But their mindset initially isn't in the same place as mine. It's unfair for me to think that too. So how do we adjust our mindset? How do we expand our mindset for more abundance? What's your practice and how can we apply it to our life too?
Yeah, man. It's again, I'm constantly, I say the same thing every day. I'm constantly reinforcing some of those mantras because I agree with you where we put these self-limiting imposed things on ourselves. And it's like, why do we do that? Why the only person that's stopping us from achieving whatever the heck we want to achieve is us. No one else has that power. So it's constantly telling myself not to putting, you know, self-limiting beliefs on it, not to limit the amount that I can make or provide or create. Because look, if I'm fulfilled in what I'm doing and it's bringing value to the world, who cares how much it is? Like, that's the thing. It's all in the eyes of the beholder. When we put that that number on it. So for instance, when I'm coaching with companies, often what I've, instead of doing the retainer, I'm like, look, I just want to be a part of profit share because I know we're going to double your revenue in the first year. I know it. I want to be a part of that way more than I want you to be like a taxi cab where you're just literally paying me money and maybe we perform, maybe we don't. So I've just found for myself is again, going back to the mantras, I'm constantly saying the same thing over and over, which freedom, love, and abundance. I say it all the time. Those are the three things that I'm creating in my life. I have put a goal in mind for the next 10 years, what that looks like monetarily speaking, and it's far bigger than just seven figures. And so I'm constantly repeating that. Now, how is it all going to work? I'm not sure because the truth is I gave up trying to plan 5 years in advance because I was wrong every single time. Joel, I have set these for over 20 years, my five-year goal, and I've been wrong every time. Three times I was wrong, much higher. We made a whole lot more. One time I was lower, 2008, 9, and 10. Thank you very much. But I just decided, it's like, look, man, I'm not going to spend a ton of time on the future because that's just going to create anxiety. I'm just going to give everything I have right now and make sure that I'm not limiting what I can accomplish.
Yeah, it's almost like we just continue to show up the exact same every day by our limited past experiences. And if you're not sitting in the present, reconditioning over and over and over and over again, that there is far more that you can create, but also coming from abundance in that, because we can think, okay, I want to go to eight figures now. But you can desperately chase after the eight figures coming from lack and scarcity. Or you can say, really grateful for what I have now. And love, family, freedom, all these things are really important to me and I appreciate it. Thank you, God. But what I'm going for is this. And I love the sport of going for this. That's why I do what I do. And I love the impact it creates. I heard you saying, because sometimes, you know, as a coach, I hear the things that are said behind the things that are said quite often. I'm like, oh, what's he saying? Where is he coming from with this? And I could tell that you're, I might be wrong in this. I can't fully assume. It seems like you've gone beyond the money and you're literally playing business like a sport. Like it's like you love to be in the game on the court doing your thing. Is that true?
Absolutely. So company one, amazing. Company three, amazing. Company two, 6 years of hell. And the reason I say that is there were six business partners all told. Three of us had our values very clearly aligned. Three of us were, they're not bad people. We just weren't aligned. And the point of that is, look, we're not on this earth that long. So why don't we enjoy every single moment that we have? And I chose, it's on me, 100%. I chose for 6 years to not be happy. And by the way, that was when my wife and I went through that separation. So I don't ever want to do that again. Why would I ever do that? Because it was a choice. Again, I have to own it. Just like you were talking about Jocko and Leif's book, Extreme Ownership, it's so true. Look in the mirror and own the fact that wherever you're at in this world, you have put yourself there. Great news. You can put yourself in a totally better situation, but it literally comes down to the choices that you make. When we take that kind of ownership and we take that responsibility on, it's really powerful because it's allowing you to say, look, I can create anything destructive or constructive, but it's on me. So yeah, man, I'm way past just the money part of it because I've so many executives I've coached where they are crushing it financially and their health is a disaster. They have been through like 3, 4, 5 divorces, which no judgment. I don't want, like, if you've been divorced, fine, not a problem, but why aren't we finding fulfillment in our relationships? And those are the guys and gals that I want to reach out to and be like, look, it can be that much better. We can upgrade in all areas of life. You're creating such abundance financially, but we can do that in your other side too. So yeah, man, it's way more important for me, my relationships with my kids and my family. And one of the books that I love to go back to is The Top 5 Regrets of the Dying by Bronnie Ware. She's an Australian gal that did palliative care. Sorry, tough word to say. But nobody on their deathbed is like, gosh, I wish I did more board meetings. I wish I really, you know, grinded it out doing more of anything work. That's always talking about, I wish I had spent more time with my family. I wish I had pursued my dreams. So don't wait until you're on your deathbed. Go do it now. And that's the season of life I'm in, brother. It's like, I want to create amazing value and I want to enjoy every day that I'm on this earth.
Yeah, it's such a solid point. That's why I like investing. Because if I can make my money work for me, it frees up the time. And you know, the thing about time, right, is we never get it back again. It's like every second that goes by here on earth is gone forever, yeah. Right? Money comes and goes, doesn't it? You know how to be able to make money. Can you multiply it? That's like the next level, right? There's some of the wealthiest people in the world on the Forbes 100 list are investors. I think 85% of them are investors. So it shows you there's money in multiplication, obviously. I love this. I love this. So you're a family man, you have two kids. What would be the greatest principle or lesson that you feel you could hand down to your children? If you had the opportunity to write that like last letter and it's a paragraph to them before you leave this earth, what would you share with your children?
Yeah, you know, I talked about my dad earlier, and it's the lesson that he also taught me, which is do what you say you're going to do. It's literally that simple. Like, and if you don't, own up to it and just don't let it happen again. So with my kids, it's the same thing. It's like, guys, do what you say you're going to do. So if you commit to something, I don't care how many times you fail, just see it through. And it's so funny. We're talking about my dad so much, or I am so much. He's definitely on my heart right now. And I lost him 2 years ago. And one of the things that I've still struggled with, I lost him. He committed suicide. And, you know, I'm not ashamed of that because that's not the definition of who he was. Yet it gave me this amazing perspective to say, I value every single moment and day on this earth. And there was a moment he was so down and that he chose not to. That I still struggle with to understand that, right? And obviously he was hurting in a way that I'll never understand, or I certainly hope I will never understand it. But it's one of those things where it's like, I don't know. I don't know why I went there other than to my dad has given me so much, both my parents, some really good, some really not so good. And I want to take the good from that. And so, yeah, man, when it comes down to it, just do what you say you're going to do. And if you don't, if you screw up, just own it.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that too. Thanks for being vulnerable and sharing that story about your father. I'd imagine it'd be really tough. Grief is tough, man. My wife and I, we lost our baby daughter 2 weeks before delivery. My wife had to deliver her naturally, and we held her in our arms, and it's very confronting, you know, to experience the shortness of life and to have so many questions unanswered as well. That's the toughest part. Like, as humans, we want certainty, don't we? It's like, just give us an answer. What happened? Why did this happen? What were they thinking? Was there anything that we could have done, right? How did you get through that stage of grief?
Yeah, you know, I don't know that I'm even through it, right? Like you said, grief is a funny thing. I think it'll always be on my heart. But, you know, and I'm sorry for your loss. My gosh, you know, no parent should outlive their child. I truly believe that. But, you know, I look for the good in every situation. There's always a lesson there. And sometimes, again, we talked about God earlier, you know, where you want to say, what the heck? Like, really? Really? And you want to play that victim card, like, I'm hurting. But the truth is, there's an amazing lesson in there. And that was what I think has helped me the most with my dad is, I want him back, brother. I want him here with me right now so I could hug him and tell him I love him and all of that. But I can't. So how can I honor my life, his life, is by celebrating every single day, by choosing to live to my fullest every single day. And I think that's the amazing gift that I was given in his tragic death, is that level of perspective. I don't think I could have ever received it not going through that hardship and losing him in such a way that I never thought was possible. So I, you know, I'm curious for you too, brother, because that would be, as much as I told you, being a dad is like my everything in life. I can't imagine. I feel for both you and your wife. Like, I send love out to you. But how was that for you to get through as well, to say, we're going to rise above this and know that this was what we learned in it? How did that go for you?
Yeah, it's such a great question. I appreciate you asking. And I mean, we're going really deep right at the end of this episode. I like this. This is real, you know, because a lot of people talk about superficial things. So I'm happy that we're going here, because I think there are a lot of people that are listening that maybe they're still holding on to that feeling of grief as well. So let's hope that this is a process to let go of more and to heal more today. You know, I say that you either drive or you dive, right? It's you let it drive you, and you drive forward and you make something out of it. Like you said, it's almost like leaving a legacy. You're representing your father still. You know, when people think of your family, especially his friends and people that know him, when they see you, they're like, well, wow, like, he still raised JM and JM's doing his thing. And obviously you don't want all the pressure in the world on you for that, but it is something to live for as well, right? For me and my wife, you know, it was a really interesting process. At first, the waves of grief are so huge. They're like tsunamis coming down on you. And over time, the waves, they still come to crash. And every now and then, it feels like you're standing in the water and you feel these little waves against you, where they're little reminders. I remember when I went down to the shopping mall, it was about 5 days later. My wife and I didn't really leave the house for 5 days or so. We just sort of laid around and tried to make sense of things and ordered Uber Eats and watched movies and things like that. But I remember hearing a baby crying, and I would see fathers walking around with their little girls, you know, holding their hands or carrying them. And I noticed all of it, and it was hard, right? But it helped me to go through it. And it's because I decided to also pay attention to it. You talked about being present and observing, and there's no way that we can heal if we stay in avoidance. So I faced off with it, man. You know, everybody has a different timeline. You can't say that, oh, it's a week long or 2 months long or 2 years. It could be most of your life. If you decide to hack away at it just a little bit at a time, it's a longer process. But some people, that's all they can manage, right? So yeah, I pulled all my coaching tools out and everything else. I had love and support. I think the most helpful thing at that time was having people not just like reach out with platitudes, because that's what everyone did. After a while, they all sort of sound the same. But having people reach out and saying, hey, I just ordered you a week's worth of food and I've sent it to your place. Like, not even just so proactive and assertive. That was the most helpful. It wasn't like, I'm so sorry for your loss. It was just straight up, hey, I'm helping you out. I'm doing this. It's like, wow. So now I know how to show up for other people that are going through loss. And maybe you're listening right now and you're like, you know what? Now I know how to do it too. And for you, JM, it's the same thing. You probably would have wanted that too. People around you just proactively like, hey, I'm coming around you to support you. You're going through a chapter right now where you're not going to play it 100% because you've got to be with you and your family and sit with this. So
isn't
yeah,
very true, Justin. I'm so sorry. Isn't that so true in life in general when people just take action? So yeah. For instance, the gal that actually connected us, she didn't say, hey, I'll try and connect you. She didn't even tell me she was going to connect me. She just did it. And now I have Joel in my life and it's such a gift. And by the way, I will refer you to other people, you know, the same way, but not using words, actually taking action. I think it's the most attractive thing that people can do in life. Yeah. Words don't mean a ton for me, honestly. It's the actions that you take. Now, I will tell you, earlier in life, I 100% would get, I don't know, kind of under a spell of people sounded good. They it looks a certain way. And I think the older that I've gotten, the main thing I've found is like, look, if you don't take action, I'm not interested. I'm just not. Like, thanks, but your words don't mean a ton. Your actions mean everything. So anyway.
That's so funny because it circles back around to that statement of pretty. Things look pretty, but are they actually what they say? You say they are, because we can make things look pretty all the time, especially with AI and Photoshop and all of the branding and the marketing hoo-ha and glitz and glamour, right? I can't tell you how many times I've even had people come to me that want to build out their businesses, and I'm sure you have too, where it looks like a cool concept or it looks really great with their marketing. You're looking at it and you're like, it's not making any revenue. There's nothing coming in. That's not a business yet. You haven't got money coming in, right?
Yeah. It is funny. I don't know why. Why not just create the value? Why not create something amazing? Instead of trying to make it look, you're actually doing all the work already. Why not just create the actual value? It is something I don't think I'll ever understand that, especially in maybe the social media world where it looks a certain way. Why not just actually show what it is? I don't know. Maybe that's the old school side of me where I'm like, I think that's the number one chapter in Let's Go Win is vulnerable. And it's funny because I was taught boys don't cry. Terrible advice, by the way. Terrible advice.
Yeah.
But you know, actually being vulnerable, it's the most important lesson that I have in leadership. And maybe that's how I start to wrap this up, because I know we're on time. But you know, truly being vulnerable and authentic, if any leaders are listening, it's the greatest gift that you can give yourself as a leader. People will follow you through a brick wall if you let them in. Instead of being a facade or trying to look a certain way, just truly show them who you are.
Yeah. And you've been in the game for like 20 years now. I've been coaching for almost 15 years and marketing for almost 20 as well. And so after a while, you see so many people come and go, don't you? You see these like hotshot entrepreneurs, you see all these people killing it on social media, then they disappear. No one cares anymore. It's like the novelty bubble bursts. You just can't do this whole fake it to make it anymore. It doesn't work. People are crying out for real now. They want authentic. And you said, oh, I don't know, maybe I'm old school. Bro, the old school is the best school, because it goes back to brass tactics. It goes back to the essentials. And that's what we need, because we are in a very complicated world. And we make it that way. We just keep stacking on and stacking on and stacking on. I think people took the like upgrade concept to a whole new level by like glitzing and glamoring everything. But for you, it's like, hey, let's work with a strong base, add on what's necessary and scrap everything else, right?
Yeah, it's just not fulfilling, man. I won't say their names, but a couple of influencers, quote unquote, or thought leaders, where I've seen them on stage and they're saying one thing, they get off stage, you go to dinner and you're like, who the hell are you? Like, it's two totally different people. I try not to say I feel bad for them because that sounds so judgmental, but I just, man, what an awful way to go through life, to not truly be authentic and have to put on a mask and a show. It's like, you know what makes me so happy is this is the same JM you get, you know, off the air, dinner, you know, in a business setting. Like, this is who I am. I'm not going to change at all. And I found that to be so refreshing and easy. And it gives you so much more energy to put towards building something amazing instead of putting all that energy to look a certain way or sound a certain way.
Yeah. And I can feel that from you. Truth operates on its own frequency. It cuts through the noise of the lies. And to maintain a lie is like trying to hold a beach ball under the water. It takes so much energy to exert to maintain a lie. And you have to remember to try and maintain the lie. Whereas the truth is, there's no having to remember. You just are and it is. So yeah, man, I love it. I love that you're authentic. This has been a vulnerable podcast. So thank you for opening up and encouraging that as well. I appreciate you, man. And if you're listening right now, make sure you get your hands on JM's books. We have just list your books right now, JM.
Let's Go Win. Keys to Living Your Best Life is the full title. Champions Daily Playbook. That's really 11 pages of text, and then it's more like a journal. And then Upgrade. And that was the most recent one. That's more of the business book, I think, than the other two. But yeah, man, thank you so much for having me. You are a fantastic host, brother. And I'm just so happy and grateful to have you in my life now, man. So I want to send that love to you and just thank you. I really appreciate you.
You too, man. Let's definitely stay connected. I have one last question. And I ask every host, every podcast guest this. If you were to deliver your last 30-second speech to the world, what would that last 30 seconds sound like?
Take off your masks. Masks are meant for parties. They're not meant for life. Your true authentic self is the most powerful, beautiful thing there is. And it's just so much easier to take it off. And that would be what I want my kids to really know more than anything is they're beautiful. They're amazing. And they don't need to be anyone else. So that would be the same message that I would deliver to everyone. It's a powerful question, by the way. And thank you for posing it, man. I'm going to think a little harder on it too, but it would be just take off your masks.